Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
And gentlemen, let's get ready to be inspired! Introducing in the red corner, American Tennis! And introducing in the blue corner, your host for American Tennis, Mr. Chuck Creasy! Ladies and gentlemen, time to get in the game.
And good morning once again. This is Coach Chuck Creasy, and it's another week of American Tennis. And folks, I want to give the numbers out right away. Air code 714-583-6853. That's 714-583-6853. If you'd like to be a guest on the show today, or call in and give your opinions, because we're going to be exploring what the heck is going on with all of the great programs we have here in the United States of America. Wonderful people, wonderful organizations, lots of money. Where are the power leaks? Where are the power leaks in American tennis? Why are we not going from 0 to 100 and really putting out the top players in the world? But our name of the program is Can Our Best Be Great Once Again? And we're going to be exploring that. So 714-583-6853. This is American Tennis. We are on the UR Tennis Network. You can get the UR Tennis Network by going to the letter U, the letter R, the number 10, and the letter S, network.com, and you can get every program that's been out there in the past 5 years. UR Tennis Network was originated by Jason Haynes, and we thank Jason, but now it is under the direction and ownership of J.P. Weber and WeCoachTennis.com and WeCoachTennis. The Facebook is fantastic out there. Go to it. They've got, I think, 3,000 participants now on the Facebook site. I'm lucky enough to have a program besides some really great programs. Coach John Denise's Florida program is every Thursday. That's tomorrow at 5:30, and he gives people in Florida and coaches in Florida the latest on what's going on, and he's breaking all kinds of records with the number of listeners he has. And Lisa Stone's Parenting Aces. And wow, how much do we need this program and parenting input into what's going on, a parent perspective. And I once said that the biggest energy leak or power leak or the void out there is what could happen if we got, and everybody's going to cringe when I say this, but they parents involved, well, people say, wow, that's a headache. No, that's where your passion is. Those are the people that really have the skin in the game and the people who love what they see coming down the road with their children and in tennis and everything. But the problem is their skin in the game only lasts a couple, 3 years until their children come through and out, in and out of junior tennis and then go to college. Pretty much when they go to college, it's done. Whenever I've tried to get parents involved in trying to affect some of the changes with the scoring systems and different things that I feel are voids in our system, their enthusiasm's great, but it weans after a year to 2 years. And but Lisa Stone has a Parenting Aces seminar pretty much every week. Tuesday is her program on the UR Tennis Network. So, and then we have J.P. Weber's We Coach Tennis. And folks, the UR Tennis Network, thank goodness it's out there, because we're allowed to stand up and speak out and say those things that need to be said. And we are able to give you a non-politically correct side of things when it is needed. And we always say the mission is for you to stand up and to speak out and for you to say those things that need to be said. And Edmund Burke, my favorite quote, says all that it takes for evil to prosper is for good men, good people to do nothing. I am scared to death, as you probably have thought about this before, but we see changes happening to the fundamental fabric of our game. I've quoted often Thomas Jefferson quote that says, in matters of principle, you stand like a rock. In matters of method, you can go with the flow, but are something to that effect. Those are the, I don't know, those are the exact words, but you understand where I'm coming from. If it's really, really, really important, you stand like a rock. If it's not that important, you go with the flow. Well, for the past 3 or 4 years, if you've listened to my programming, we've had a lot of things happening to tennis from the top down that really may be hindering and perhaps causing some of the power leak where our best talent is not reaching fruition or reaching their top maturity level in their game. And we might be committing self-suicide in our sports, in the tennis world, in that there are so many factors involved. And look, we've got great people in the USTA, we've got great people in the ITA, we've got great people in the collegiate system, but the bottom line is too many chefs ruined a broth, and we all have seen that, and we all have seen, golly, Sweden rise at one time, Germany rise at one time, we've seen the Argentine, we've seen a lot of the smaller countries, just Croatia, come on, how in the world do you get good at, what, Bosnia or where in the heck is, some of these players that coming out, Switzerland, but the smaller countries are outdoing the United States as far as players on the pro circuit and players in the top in the world. And I'm sort of setting the table for what I want to talk about today. And I want to talk about, we want to name it, claim it, and tame it. We don't want to name it, claim it, blame it, if you understand what I'm saying. I don't want this just to be a gripe session about how crummy we're doing and bringing players out on the circuit. I want to try to talk about where are the power leaks and can our best really be great again. And the proof is always in the pudding, they say. The pudding has for the past 10 or 15 years has not, we've never had more than one player, I think, in the top 10 in the world. Thank God for John Isner. Thank good for Sam Querrey and a few others and Andy Roddick. But other than that, I went to a function this last week and somebody came over to me and they said, where in the heck are the American players at? And I live in Charleston, and they had just gone to the Family Circle event, and they said, well, You know, where are the American players? I can't pronounce half of the other names, and I want to see some Americans rise. But we want to talk about this and address this exactly where it is. And I'll give you that broad perspective, and maybe we can start sort of impacting from the inside out. Again, outside in does not work. It's got to go inside out, whether you're teaching a player or you're trying to make an impact. Inside out. Bottom up works. Top down does not work. We've been throwing money and doing everything possible from the top down, from the organizational structure to USTA and the ITA, to try to really get this thing turned around and get prevent college teams from being dropped and to get players on the pro tour and to make tennis the great, great sport, recognized as the great, great sport it is, because we really are in a bit of a down period. And whose fault it is, I don't think it's anybody. It's not anybody's fault. It's sort of, I think we just have to recognize what I'm going to call the power leaks of tennis, the power leaks. When you work with a player who's big and strong, or they are athletic and they have beautiful-looking stroke, and something breaks down in that link, that kinetic chain that we talk about, from the feet to the legs to the hips to the rotation of the trunk until the racket acceleration. We often talk about power leaks. If a player looks like they should have a lot of power, but where are the leaks at? And we have that whole kinetic chain all set up from the USTA. The structure of tournaments, the organizations, they're in every state. They have the Southern, the Midwest. They have all their sections. They have all their ducks in a row. They have the committees. They have plenty of money. Where are the power leaks? Where are the power leaks at? Let's talk briefly. I'm going to refer to golf here. Collegiate golf has been a prime source or prime talent developer of all of the players that go out on the PGA or the LPGA tour for many, many years, and they continue to do so. It's beautiful when you hear that, whether it's Daniel Berger, now Jay Berger's son, wow, he went to Florida State. They always talk about Florida State. You know, you always talk about the players. You talk about those players who went to Georgia Tech. Davis Love III, the great North Carolina, University of North Carolina player. And or Phil Mickelson, who won the NCAA. I think he, correct me if I'm wrong, I think he did. He went at Oklahoma State, Arizona. I know it was one of the Western schools. They talk about, I think, Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods went to Stanford. But all of this is wonderful, that it promotes golf, but it promotes college golf. Now, why does college golf, which is a very similar sport to tennis, a very similar as far as the type of kids that get into it, the type of money it takes to be good at it, the structure, and why is golf prospering? Why do the players from the United States dominate in the pro ranks after being in the college ranks, and that we don't do this in tennis? Why is this happening? And I want to point out something very, very basic that many people may not have thought about, but most high school golfers, and before they go to college, the thing that all golfers or all athletes in high school are looking for, they're looking for the scholarship to go to college and to be on a college team, and hoping this primes them for the tour. Now, every other sport, think about baseball, the amount of baseball players that we have come through college going to the pros, football, basketball, track and field. I mean, all the training ground has been collegiate sports. But in tennis, I think we have four out of the top 100 now. I think Steven Johnson, by the way, who went undefeated in college tennis his junior and his senior year, he came through the collegiate system, did not lose his junior, senior year. He's top 100. By the way, I'm just throwing this out as a side note. His father was quoted on the We Coach Tennis program about 6 to 8 months, it might have been a year ago now, that if they had used no ad scoring, his son would have probably had to take 10 to 20 losses. And he was asked about that and by the host, and he said, no doubt about it, he would have had to take a lot of losses. There's a complete difference in the results for a player like a Mitchell Frank with traditional scoring versus no ad scoring. But I'm just throwing that out as a side note because I don't want to go there. I want to back up here and look at the difference between college golf and college tennis. I think the correlation between these two could be made the easiest. But here's the point I want to make. In college golf, up until the 1960s, late 1960s, college golf was a dual match sport. In other words, when you went to play, if Clemson went to play Georgia Tech, the number one player would play match play 18 holes against the number one player. Number two player would play the two. Three would play the three. High school golf was exactly the same. It was a dual match play format. Somewhere in the 1960s, and if anybody out there knows the exact time this happened, but talking to the golf coach where I used to work at Clemson, Larry Penley had told me one time that it was in the late 1960s, they decided to go to a tournament format in medal play instead of match play. In other words, they would put all the players together like tournament tennis versus dual match tennis. And in doing so, they allowed every player in the tournament, they would go to, instead of playing a dual match on the weekend, where Clemson's going to play Georgia, Clemson's going to play Georgia Tech, and they'd play two matches, that they would bring eight teams together, and eight times eight players or six players is a draw 48 or 64. And these players would play the tournament just like professionals do for a medalist event, and everybody would be going after the top prize. Now, in doing so, you can imagine the motivation of a number six man on a University of Georgia team where he's behind five other players, and he's saying, I'm just as good as those guys. I can do this. And they would go play medalist tournament. And what ends up happening is, yeah, that number six guy ends up maybe top five at the tournament. All of a sudden the coach says, whoa, I didn't know this young man had that under the hood. When they would play dual matches and medal match play only, you would say to the number six man, well, good for you. You won 3-2. This is the way they say it. I forget how they say the three holes to go, win by two or two and three. I think two holes to go, you're up by three. Maybe they'd even stop it. But you beat the number six man, you just beat the number six man. So you see where I'm going with this. Dual match tennis does not develop players at a top level. Now, we used to be able to work around this by using players. We could give them dual matches. For example, when I was at Clemson in the 80s, I had a player, Jay Berger, played 74 matches. I had a player named Lawson Duncan that played 86 matches, but they weren't all dual matches. Probably 35 were dual matches. The rest was tournament play. So we really could get the number, match number up in the count. We were able to play a mixture of tournaments and dual matches. And let me say that hybrid, that formula really works good, coaches, if you want a player to really come along. But dual match tennis does not develop players. Team tennis does not develop. Team format does not develop players. When you see these leagues plays in these ladies' leagues and men's leagues, a lot of times you're covering up the bad players, and everybody thinks they could be good. Wait a minute. I want to preface this by saying I'm not trying to offend anybody out there. But you know what I know, folks, you're a 35-year-old weekend warrior and you go out and you play number three on the team and you play a match. Hey, I beat a guy and you're thinking I'm just as good as that guy at one. And you don't have to prove it. You don't have to back it up. You can sort of be a poser a little bit there. When you play tournament tennis, there's no way of ducking it. Now, here's the beautiful thing about tournament tennis, too. Here's the beautiful thing about medal play in golf. in metal playing golf, the number four player could be the hero of the NCAA tournament. That's happened in 2003 at Clemson. Actually, a local young man, I think it was Jack Ferguson, I believe. He's from a little town of Seneca, South Carolina. He was number four on the team. He was in the last round battling against, I think it was Oklahoma State's top player, but I have no idea who that was. Forgive me on that one. But they had to come, they were playing coming down the stretch, and they were the two last guys, and he was sort of the hero. He closed it out, and his score mattered a lot for the winning of that tournament. Now, what we do with dual match tennis is that guy would have been playing number four maybe for 4 years, and afterwards he says, wow, you know, I can't do it. I can't even beat the number three guy on my team. You see where I'm going with this? It's just awful in the team structure. Folks, I've coached 36 years of dual match tennis and tournament tennis. Actually, 45 years of tournament tennis as well. Dual match tennis is okay for saying, how do you do? Do you like this game of tennis? Hey, we're going to have a social time and let's have a get together afterwards. It's social tennis. But as far as what we're trying to do with it being competitive tennis, it's completely wrong. It's the wrong direction to go. And the people who like team tennis say, wow, it's exciting. Well, it is exciting somewhat. It is exciting in those rare occasions when the match comes down to the last player and one person makes it and the other person doesn't. And it's an exciting thing. However, tennis is an individual sport, and it could, with some team opportunities for participation, it is not built. Dual match tennis is not built for performance. It is built for participation. If we want our top players to come out of the woodwork, we need to put them in tournament tennis. Dual match tennis smothers a lot of careers, and let me say why. Each win in dual match tennis only allows you to go arithmetically. If you have success and you win at number one, the players are talented enough to where it might be like winning a semifinals or a quarterfinals match at number one singles. And it's really, really a great win. In tournament tennis, that would be the kind of win you get into quarterfinals, propels you to the semifinals match. And guess what? You're in the semifinals now. You're only, think, your last four out of 32 players or 64 players, you just beat this good player, and this propels you. In dual match tennis, it is only an arithmetic growth. And when you lose that deciding match, you have geometric fallout. Oh, exponential fallout. In tournament tennis, you grow exponentially. Every win allows you to separate yourself from another half of the draw. If you started out 128, that first win allows you to pass by 64 other players. So you grow exponentially. That second win, with two wins in tournament tennis, you've separated yourself now from what? 96 players. You are in the last 32 now. And then you win again, you separate yourself again. And with three or four wins, you grow exponentially. But guess what? When you fall and you lose, you only fall arithmetically. How many players do you have you seen, even on the pro tour? A player will lose first round, and it does some damage, but minimal damage. I've seen players lose first round, lose first round, lose first round, and pop up and win a tournament, and they are good to go. In dual match tennis, I see a player lose with their team on the line and losing these team matches in their career, their season is spent. And the coach is talking about taking you out of the lineup because you blew it. This is not that kind of a sport. This is a individual sport with, this is an individual sport with team opportunity. Team tennis is for participation. It is not for performance. So I'm just, the biggest power leak that we have might be the format itself in college tennis. Look, college tennis should be the stepping stone for professional tennis in the United States of America. We are not geared the same way as other countries where the kids travel around on trains and play in tournaments and see if they can climb the ladder, the ATP ladder or WTA ladder. College tennis is a necessary thing for the structure of our tennis. It's critical that the format is right. It's critical that we're doing the right things. That's where we are failing. They made a great selection with the USTA when they hired a young Stephen Armitage to head up what's going on with USTA collegiate tennis. And he's hungry, he's smart, he's passionate for the game, and he will do the right thing. But the machinery of the ITA and what they are structuring, and listen, playing out their lack of, well, golly, am I going to say their lack of not knowing, or their naivety, or their, let's put it this way, their agenda is not for top players to emerge. It is not for developmental. It is more for entertainment structure. Entertainment structure. Maybe overall we could look at the entertainment structure again as part of the problem. The marketeers, as Coach J.P. Weber calls them, when entertainment drivenness and numbers, people started, instead of keeping the sport pure, the marketeers came in and they started doing graphs and flowcharts and Excel sheets on how much money are they making, how many rackets you're selling. But our sport went from an education-driven to an entertainment-driven sport. USTA keeps numbers. They keep numbers how many people are playing and all this. But the marketeers, I'm saying the racket manufacturers, the clothes, and all the whole industry itself should not have anything to do or say, and they should not have the impact they do on collegiate nor junior tennis. They should not have an impact because it's just killing the perspective of player development. And but college golf has it figured out. College tennis does not. College basketball, football, baseball, they're all driven. Do you know we have 6,000 people making a living in baseball, men in baseball, with all of the leagues, the summer leagues, the travel leagues, the single A, double A, triple A teams? By the way, you know, their expenses are paid for, their travel's paid for. You know, they live with a meager earnings, but they can stay alive as a player. In pro tennis right now, it's a struggle. You can't make a living. You can't stay out there. I mean, this is a whole topic for another issue, another topic, and I have programs that we've had on this. But I want to come back and talk real quickly, briefly about some more of these power leaks and things that we can do because, folks, we got the resources. Folks, we got great people out there working. Folks, we got everything in place to structure. Well, wait a minute. Too many tournaments that are, well, that's a different thing. We've dumbed down the meaningfulness of the tournaments. Our tournaments of heritage, we've gotten a little bit too slick with L1, L2, L3, and all this stuff. Who cares whether you win L1, L2? People want to win a tournament of heritage more than anything else. But look, we've got to do a commercial. We'll be right back on American Tennis. This is Coach Chuck Creasy.
This is Coach J.P. Weber of the We Coach Tennis Radio Show. In my 30 years experience in coaching tennis, I've never seen a better tennis training situation for children than Coach Creasy's Total Tennis Training Camps. Chuck Creasy has coached them and trained them in every arena from juniors to collegiate to professional tennis, and over 15,000 children have improved their games at his summer tennis camps. Find out more at ChuckCreasy.net. That's ChuckCreasy.net.
Coach, this is Coach Chuck Creasy, And I wanted to remind you as well to go to chuckcreasy.net, and you can get information on my summer camps for 2016. Also, my books are there, and hey, go to Amazon, and you can order some of my books. Also, I've been writing a lot lately. Take chuckcreasy.net and open it up there and see those things that I've been writing about and see if it makes sense to you. And call in the American Tennis Program and tell us what you think. American Tennis, and we're talking today about can our best be great, and what's going on, where is the power leak, and we've been talking about college tennis, the format being a power leak, and of course, you know, if you've listened to my program at all, every week I point out the fact that the abbreviation of the scoring systems is an abomination. How else can I say a bastardization? A dumbed down, the worst possible, it's self-suicide, it's Harry Caray, it's the worst possible thing we could be doing to the game of tennis, because we're diminishing it in hopes, again, once again, the marketeers thinking that we might get more people playing and we'll get the hook in our mouth. Well, easy to pick up, easy to put down, hard to pick up, hard to put down. You need to understand, USTA, that you are fishing with a barbless hook when you go out and try to get people enticed by making something easy, because it does not inspire. It might gain interest for a while. They might go casually, oh, this is interesting. This is a nice after-school activity, but it is not a tough, rigorous varsity sport. And it is the sheer difficulty of something that entices people to want to do it again and again and again and again and again. It's the failure that increases the desire to be successful. It is not having easy successes. So if you've listened to my programs at all, you know that. I was supposed to go out to the NCAA tournament this week, and those of you listening, I'm sorry, I said I was going to call back with what's going on, but golly, the plan was go there. I told my wife I needed to go out and fight and continue to fight. I'm giving the enemy maybe a little hope here, but the enemy should not be the enemy in the ITA. But the fact of the matter is what they have stood for and what they have done in the last 4 years is terrible. And I say it that simply. The agenda has been to please the marketeers, to try to the USTA with their marketing first, education second agenda. Yeah. Now look, again, you good people who work for the USTA, it's so appreciated, the good things you do. But how could you be more wrong about this? Who are you listening to that people say, look, we make it easier and we're going to make it better? What are you thinking? What are you thinking? I mean, really, do you believe that making anything easier makes it better. This the thinking is diluted, polluted, and it's just not right. But the ITA, I believe, has been somewhat the culprit here. And I can go through the 13 really breaches in the trust that has been going on since 2000. Well, it's been going on for a while, but we do have new leaders in there. And again, it's yet to be seen whether or not they will hear the voices of everyone or whether it is just an extension of what we had going on before. But the USTA, people who are pushing for college tennis to be a much more dumbed down version, fewer reps, bastardized scoring system, wrong format. How can I go on? The influx of international recruits that has taken over all of the places for our USA players. Not all of them. I mean, yes, there's many, many. I got to work for the great Harry Hopman. I got the great Dennis Vandermeer. They were both from different countries that gave a lot to our system. However, it's completely out of hand now. It's something. We have 80% of our scholarships. I think it's 65 actually. 65% have gone to international students. On the female side, was Title IX really set up to protect women from France, Germany, and Argentina and Thailand? Or was it set up to protect our USA girls? Title IX has worked, was a very good law. It's been very poorly implemented. So with all this, the Oversight Commission, which the ITA should be, and the USTA, the learned people there, should have a grasp of what in the heck are you guys thinking? What are you guys thinking by dumbing down the system, abbreviations, and the NOAD scoring and the 10-point tiebreaker for the third set and stopping matches when somebody gets to four and the entertainment-drivenness of it all instead of the education-drivenness that it should be? How can you think that we're going to have champions? How can you even think that, guys? I mean it's an impossibility. You can't keep sending people back to the fourth grade over and over and over again and say, hey, do you get it? You're good enough to go to college now. You can't play these abbreviated or these dumbed-down formats and really think that it's going to promote professional players or great players through the system. It's just not possible. So what's going on? You have got wonderful people, Stephen Armitage. You've got wonderful people in the player development program who are doing their very, very best, but they're handcuffed. They're handcuffed. That, and then add that to the format that is antiquated, out of date, and the wrong one for participation tennis. Dual matches are just fine. It was a fun outing, but it's not the format that develops top players. So I was going to go out to the NCAA tournament this week and just do what I could do, and I don't want to give up. I never give up. It's not a wire the way I'm wired. And I talked to my good friend Randy Blumendahl, who's pretty awesome, just a great, great coach and a great, great man. And he said, look, he said, you're going to go out there and you're going to be fighting windmills. And really our leaders, they're basically knee-jerking, and a lot of them just try to save their jobs. So what they do is they create something to act like they're throwing something against the wall and hoping that it sticks. And what they're throwing against the wall does not inspire anyone. What they're throwing against the wall does not motivate youngsters to say, wow, I really want to go play college tennis because of the format. Now, college tennis should be the goal of all of our youngsters, but I'm saying the format, no ad scoring does not inspire youngsters to want to play. I saw a statistic where 96% of our players don't want to play it in college, and they forced us to play it anyway. and the statistics are just overwhelming how many of our coaches and players are against this.
Right.
And I want to give a real simple point that should trump everything I'm saying. 141 years of tennis development, tennis pecking order, tennis achievement has been marked by our beautiful scoring system in tennis. It is unbelievable to think that our leaders could say, well, by the way, it doesn't really matter. Our scoring system doesn't matter. We think that this will allow more players to play. We think that because people's attention span is not as good, we think that this will be a better format, that let's go ahead and change the very core structure of our game of tennis. We've taken the heart out of the sport. We've made chess into checkers. We made fly fishing into bait casting. We made something that was the most beautiful scoring system ever that separated us from ping pong, badminton, racquetball, and those games that might be good if they had any depth to the scoring system at all. Hey, folks, play ping pong next time with tennis scoring, with deuces and ads, and see how brilliant it becomes. And you'll find out within two games the choking that goes on and all of the stuff. It's so fantastic. The drama that it creates in a simple game of ping pong. But how can we take that out and really, really think that our game will flourish? Well, my friend just said, Coach, you've got a whole week here you can spend with your family. You're at a stage in life where you're fighting windmills, and he sort of talked to me. My wife said, go out there and battle. I love her. She is awesome. She's so awesome. She said, go out and battle. Don't let those guys just do what they want to do again. Again, they just push stuff through. And I don't know if I'm going to have time to go through everything they've done in the last 5 years, but I've written it all down in bullet points. But, folks, we really have some challenges here. And I want to make this point that it might be simple enough if we could just change the format to college and high school to all tournament tennis and then just play some participation matches. Coach Randy Blumenthal did have a great format where he had recommended that in the fall we do 8 weeks of, look, September, October, do 8 weeks of dual match format. Then in the spring, let the kids play tournaments and see who the best players are. I think Texas actually has that high school system. It'd be great. And in college, if we would do that, that would solve a lot of the problems. But over and over again, we are not really thinking through this. Where is the leak in the thinking? Where is the power leak in people's thinking, our leaders' thinking? They're not thinking education. They're thinking entertainment. They're not thinking player development. They're thinking about how many players do we have on the court. They're not thinking through this in a deep enough fashion. And I'm here to tell you that coaches are outraged, and so are the players. But, see, young coaches are just glad to be in the game, and they don't say anything. Old coaches just want to be out of the game. They're just, I've battled this enough. I've fought enough battles. Believe me, I know how that one feels. And those coaches sort of middle of the road in age are just saying, well, I better just hang on to my job. You know, I better not make waves. And the excuse is always like, well, our leaders really know what they're doing. Well, they don't. You know, I'm just telling you, they don't. They don't know what they're doing. It's that simple. Some of them have a grasp of it, but then they're handcuffed with overregulation and too many layers of bureaucracy. Now, how do we go about this, and how do we go about making it to where the power the leaks there are not leaks? This is as simple as it is and what we need to do. We need to look at the difference between entertainment and education objectives. Is this an educational activity, not a mix? Let's have a mixer and see if people can be friends. But I'm saying a tough sport where players learn how to compete, they learn about themselves, and they learn all of the depths or the competitive nature of their heart and their soul. Or do we want it to be a mixer? We have to divide education and entertainment. We have to divide performance, which is education, and participation, which is entertainment. We need to divide those two up and those two objectives. That's the biggest obstacle that we need to do. And then with that, we can let the entertainment-driven people or the money marketeers, the money people who are just trying to get people in casually. What we can do is let them do whatever they want to do. I mean, if you got a hocus-pocus show and you want to play different formats and stuff, do it for mixers and things. But stay the heck, you guys who don't understand this, who haven't been in the arena, stay the heck out of the most precious heirloom that we have in our sport. That's our scoring system. That is our most precious heirloom, 141 years. This is the rock that we need to stay firm with. This has to be the rock of our base. Thomas Jefferson, stand like a rock. When it's a matter of principle, we hang on to this cornerstone. And then do the other things. Think of the other things that they did. By golly, the marketeers changed the rackets. They changed the court. They've got this red, orange, green stuff. This is all good, but you don't let it change the fabric of what we're trying to do. You don't change the fabric. You don't change the fundamental principles of our game. And folks, we really need to stand up and stand solid and really speak out. And you know what? You get to a place in life where you just don't care what people think. You know, but you need to deliver the message. Try not to deliver the blow. Deliver the message without delivering a blow is the best way. But I'm asking you, stand up, speak out, and defend our game, defend the character and the culture of our game. It has been diluted, polluted, and prostituted. And through no official message being sent by someone to dilute it, pollute it, and prostitute it, it's just that the marketeers want the participation. That's all they want. They're not into performance. Folks, we've done a great job in the last 5 years turning out great junior players. We've won Wimbledons and French Opens and Australian Opens and U.S. Opens. There's a lot of great talent, but it's fallen through the cracks. It'd be like a golfer. You get these great golfers, and then all of a sudden, instead of stretching them with tougher courses, you put them back on Pee Wee courses and say, okay, great golfers, get good. Get really, really good now. Well, we wouldn't have the success on the PGA Tour if we did that, would we? We have kids that are really doing great in math, sciences, and you say, whoa, stop. We're going to dumb it down now. We're going to put you back into seventh grade. Doesn't this feel good? Isn't it nice that everybody's a winner now? Folks, look, we all know this. You know exactly what I'm talking about. I bet 90% of y'all out there listening agree with me. It all stems from we've got to separate participation from performance. Get that division well understood. Entertainment versus education. And get the daggone marketeers out of performance-driven stuff. Get them out. They don't know. They're just trying to sell rackets. You know, and they're just trying to make a buck. They look at tennis is a commodity. I look at it as a lifetime teaching tool. I look at it as the greatest teaching tool that we have for our youth of America. I love it from the depth of my soul. And you guys do too. And I said this before, what they've done to it, what's be happening to it now would be like if your son or daughter or my son or daughter grew up to be a drug dealer or something like, you know, just something that was trashy, cheap, and something that is not to be respected. Rich, a rhinestone, maybe famous, a rhinestone, But the diamond that tennis is takes time, pressure, structure, and takes our children to be challenged to their greatest, greatest depth of their being. I'd love for you to call in next week, 714-583-6853. If you have any questions or comments, hey, send me an email at chuck@coachcreasy.com. chuck@coachcreasy.com. And remember to listen to American Tennis every week on the UR Tennis Network. And thank you, J.P. Weber.
Semper Fi tattooed on his left arm. Spend a little more in the store for a tag in the back of this USA. Won't buy nothing that he can't fix. With WD-40 and a Craftsman wrench, he ain't prejudiced. He's just made in America.
Folks, I'm so tired. This is Coach Chuck Creasy reminding you that you are in the process of winning or losing every day of your life, and it has very little to do with a win or a loss, and we will see you next week on American Tennis.
Opinions stated by various contributors to the UR Tennis Network and its programming are not to be considered as endorsed by the UR Tennis Network. Participants are encouraged to use their own discernments and draw their own conclusions. All information, products, and services offered by the UR Tennis Network are for personal use only. The UR Tennis Network does not confirm nor deny the validity or accuracy of information contained within the network. Any products or services provided for should be used solely for entertainment purposes. We emphasize the idea of keeping an open mind and not construing the products, services, or data as factual.